This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Welcome back. Thanks for watching, as always, on YouTube TV, listening on Sirius XM channel 158, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and any of our great affiliates across the country. It is the second stop on the PGA Tour this year, the American Express. And to join us right now and give out some best bets with analysis is Jeff Seely. You can follow him on X at Cupmaker Jeff. And the Cupmaker podcast is coming up later on tonight with leading golf odds maker over at the Westgate, Jeff Sherman. What's up, pal? How are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. Looking forward to another exciting week. This is probably the best, as good or the best American Express field we've ever had. So this is going to be exciting. Finally feels like golf is fully back. We sort of dipped our toe in the water last week. Now when we got Scottie Scheffler playing, it feels like a real event.
And are you attacking it then in the normal market, the winner with Scheffler, or did you look at any of the winner without Scottie?
No, I'm playing winner with Scottie just because there's a lot of things that, the courses are so short and so easy there that here that, well, you know, Scottie can certainly win the event. I think it levels the playing field now and brings a lot more players into play. And that's evidenced by the fact that, you know, the last handful of winners have been north of 70-1 or so. So you see long shots come through here a lot. Wouldn't surprise me to see a long shot come through, you know, this week as well. So I'm being pretty conservative, honestly, in my card, and that I'm playing some smaller bets on the outrights and just playing some top 20s along the way, because I think this is going to be a lot of variance this week, and I'm gonna save some of my bigger bets for the farmers coming up here shortly.
All right, fair enough. The shortest shot on the betting menu on the board for this tournament that you want to attack it with is whom?
There's two guys who are both 25-1. I played Russell Henley, who was the first guy I played. Again, just hits his irons very well. Did so last week. His first real tournament in some time was last week. Finished T14 here last year. So just a good price on a guy who thrives on courses where you don't have to bomb it to win. I played him top 20 at plus 110 as well. So I think that should be a pretty easy finish for him, as well as Sam Burns, 25-1. Again, just really good putter, and he's field average and everything else. So John Rahm once famously referred to this event as a putting contest. So I'll take one of the most consistent tee to green guys out there, and maybe the best putter on the PGA Tour. So Sam Burns and Russell Henley are my two guys at 25-1. I'd play, and then I'd both play both of them top 20 at plus 110.
All right, inching into the sweet spot now with so many guys 50-1 or higher have won this tournament going back. Take us through like the 40-60-1 guys.
You know, guys, this is a really interesting week when you talk about AI versus traditional handicapping. A lot of people are on Siwoo Kim this week, including me, for very good reason. He's ball striking's never been in question. Elite ball striker. Putting's always the issue. But this is by far and away his best putting surface, and he has putted really, really well at this event. Something I've never said about Siwoo Kim before. So was a winner here in 2021, comes in with great form, having finished fourth, third, and 11th at his last three events. So I feel like it's a really good AI versus handicapper scenario. AI sims don't like him at all this week. The golf handicapping community seems to love him. I guess we'll see how it shakes out. But I definitely like Siwoo this week. My favorite way to play him is top 20 at plus 140. I played a little bit on the outright as well. And then Alex Noren comes in with great form, having two top 20s and a second-place finish at the Hero in the last 2 months. So, while he hasn't murdered it off the tee, he's gained across the board in every other category for the last 2 months and off the tee. So, I think it's a really good week to take a look at Alex Noren, another guy who I played top 20 plus 185, along with a little bit on the outright. Hasn't crushed it at this event, but does have a top 25 and a top 20 in only four visits. So I think that he can pretty easily get through a top 20, and I like that good value on that number, I think. And then, guys, maybe this is the Daniel Berger breakthrough week we've been waiting for. Not only after looking great at the RSM, did not look great at the RSM, but looked really good last week at the Sony. Now we get him at an easy event that should be a shootout. I mean, he should absolutely be licking his chops here. This is likely to bet the last time we're going to see Berger with a six in front of his odds outside of majors if he finishes well here again this week. So another great play. Top 20, you can find it 2-1. But 60-1 on Berger, I think, is a good price. I certainly expect him to be at least in the conversation on Sunday. So excited to see how that shakes out.
All right, we're going to get to your bombs coming up in a minute. This is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest, Jeff Seely, he's on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on X at Cupmaker Jeff, and the Cupmaker podcast is coming up later on tonight. We're talking about the American Express on the PGA Tour this week. I have to ask this question at the beginning of the year because we'll get it throughout no matter what. But when you, and again, you're going to make the case a lot for top 10s, top 20s, I think more specifically, as usual. But where do you typically like, you can name the books too, where do you typically like to bet the top 20s? Because there is a difference, right? Some will pay out dead heats and others will not. They'll pay out pretty much everybody. So where do you prefer to play like top 20s?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the one place I know that they've adjusted their payouts is at DraftKings, where they pay top 20 and you know, ties included. So that's been a big change for DraftKings over the past, say, 2 years or so. Another like kind of nationwide book that I do like is Bet365. I like them because they have the each way markets, which are very interesting, where you know, you bet a guy to win, but if he doesn't win, he comes in, say, second, third, fourth, or fifth. You get a fraction of your payout accordingly there. So those are, and frankly, DraftKings matchups have stunk. There's a couple of matchups I played on FanDuel today. I liked some of FanDuel's matchups better than DraftKings. So you really have to shop around and know the rules and various things. I liken it to the NFL props deal, right? Or it's NBA or whatever it is. If you bet some player props on FanDuel and the guy doesn't make it to halftime, you still lose your bet. And other books like DraftKings, they'll release or refine your bet. So it's critically important to know the rules and shop around and pay attention to what you're doing. But I think for if I were just betting one sports book for golf, purely golf, it would be Bet365.
All right. Fair enough. Let's work our way down the board now. A bomb this week that you're considering at 71. Which golfer is it?
Yeah, guys, Pearson Cootie is a guy. He's the 26-year-old, has gained across the board last week en route to a T13 finish and has finished inside the top 30 in 6 of his last 7 events. There's a lot of books out there that you can find top 30s and top 40s, especially just before they tee off. So take a look at those markets because I would highly encourage you to look at a top 30 or top 40 here as well on this guy. There's not a lot to not like here, given the form and that the fact that he played in this event last year. So he didn't do well, but it gave him some experience. I played a little bit on the outright at 70-1 and top 20 at plus 235. And guys, quickly becoming my favorite golfer. He's certainly one of my top 5 favorite golfers. Is a guy who comes in this tournament ranked number 3 in iron play over the last 36 events. Number 1, Scottie Scheffler. Number 2, Siwoo Kim. And number 3 is Sammy Valimaki, who's 130-1 this week. Last time Sammy Valimaki went out, he won the RSM. He was 18th at Bermuda and 2nd at El Cardinal. So his last 3 events, he has a win, a 2nd, and an 18th, and yet we find him at 130-1 in a tournament where we know bombs can win. If he can find a spike putter week to go with his irons, he can absolutely win this event. I bet him a little bit on the outright on the 130-1, and then I do like him top 20 plus 350, terrific number on Sammy Valimaki, who's fun to watch. His iron play is spectacular, and I would love to see him make a run this week.
And also, based on what you were just saying, feels like he might be a good bet then for first-round leader.
Terrific bet for first-round leader. Yeah, I think Cootie, Valimaki are both really good first-round leader plays if you're looking to throw a dart that may not get there in the end.
All right, Jeff. Awesome stuff, man. Best of luck this week.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
There you go. Jeff Seely on the Progressive Guest Line at Cupmaker Jeff on X and the Cupmaker podcast coming a little bit later on tonight with Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate. So Scotty's in it, but again, really the first time for him playing in months in a, you know, an event like this, like most of these guys anyway.
$1.20 top 5.
Yeah.
Amazing. That is something. So a lot of bombs have cashed in this. Hell of a write-up on VSiN.com today from Wes Reynolds. You can check out his picks and the history of this as well. I retweeted that.
I was listening to a
job as always.
First of all, the golf podcast here on VSiN every week called Long Shots is terrific, and I highly recommend that you put that in your podcast listening rotation. I was listening to another one. I'll shout out Andy Lack, who was very good on golf, like really, really good. And in his podcast, he was doing a bunch of AI stuff this year, getting ready for the majors. and the stuff that he inputted and going back and forth, working for a long time with the AI model that he was working with, kind of, if I'm not speaking out of turn here, I believe he said it basically shot back that Scottie Scheffler should be around even money to win the Masters.
God.
With the stats that he was using and plugging into the system and everything like that. Tiger territory. Yeah. That's officially Tiger territory like that then.
Yeah.
If we're not there already with the guy. So, where could he possibly go this year in events that he's in if he just takes off and starts? What if he starts hot this season?
Mm-hmm.
And where some of those numbers could go. All right, up next, Paulie's going to recap the betting action from last night. Win some, lose some. This cash for the 13th straight game at home last night. Details coming up next.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. We are live in downtown Vegas from the Circa Resort Casino. Man, love Wednesdays. I love how the hour begins. We go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Wednesdays with Vito's son, the great Sal Palantonio here on the program. Look, we have to get right into it. Pleasure as always, my man. You were in Denver for the Broncos and the Bills. You watched everything unfold during the game, after the game, what was taking place. Your opinion, your thoughts on the Bills whacking Sean McDermott?
Well, listen, I've seen a lot of football games in the postseason where the Bills were bounced out in Kansas City, in Buffalo, and this particular game. And I've covered the NFL now for 34 years. I've never seen a player so inconsolable after the game is Josh Allen coming up to the podium. I'm sitting right there in front of him when he comes to the podium, and he starts bawling his brains out that he let the team down. So if the quarterback, who had four turnovers, and the team, who had five, let the team down, why are you firing the coach? I don't get it. Now, if you're the owner and you want to say, guys, if you want to say, listen, we need a new voice in the locker room, I get that. That happens all the time. If you remember the Tampa Bay Bucks, they fired Tony Dungy after another loss in the playoffs. Dungy couldn't get him over the hump. They brought in John Gruden. And what was their reasoning at the time? I remember covering it. Their reasoning at the time, the Glazers said, we think we need a new voice in the locker room that the players will respond to. And they went out and they won the Super Bowl the following year with John Gruden as the head coach in Tampa. Just say that. That's okay. We will get that. But don't tell me that you fired the coach because the quarterback was crying. That's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want your thoughts on, there was a report that Pegula and Bean were upset when McDermott questioned how good the roster is. I think McDermott has a case there. I think Allen's the whole team.
Well, of course, Allen's the whole team. That's the narrative that we've been talking about all year long, that he has to put his cape on.
Yeah.
He's Superman, and he has to carry a team with a bad roster. The last time I looked, he's got a GM and an owner that's put the roster together. You know, listen, I've known Sean McDermott since he was in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit biased. I'm going to say that. I've known the guy for 25 years. He's an upstanding guy. He's a tremendous coach, but the bottom line is they haven't won the big games. So it's okay to move on from a coach. I'm not saying that it's not the right move. All I'm saying is just don't put it on Sean McDermott and say, well, we had a bad roster because of Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
The quarterback was crying because of Sean McDermott. The quarterback turned the ball over because of Sean McDermott. You know, the running back, James Cook, had one of the worst turnovers I've ever seen in a playoff game. They are marching down the field. I remember saying this on ESPN Radio halftime interview. They're marching down the field. And I've seen Sean Payton with his arms folded many times before on the sideline, his lips pursed. He's really angry. The crowd at Mile High is out of it. It's dead silence. They're marching down the field, and James Cook gets blown up by Alex Singleton. Is that Sean McDermott's fault? No way.
Oh, that's well said. Okay, you've been covering the league for 34 years. I think I have it that you've been hosting the matchup show since, what, 2004?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's so good and how you guys break down these games. Based on the overall matchups, let's begin AFC title game. It's on a Wednesday here. You got a couple of days yet. However, no more Bo Nix. He's replaced by Jared Stidham. How do you think this matchup goes?
Well, you know, I am host of the matchup show and have been for two decades. But these championships, these playoffs, the biggest story is not matchups. It's not personnel. Last week I told you about the fourth quarter lead changes, record number of them. I got a number for you right now. It's going to blow you away. The biggest story of the NFL playoffs is not X's and O's. It's not Jimmy's and Joe's. It's the record number of turnovers.
That's right. Absolutely.
In these NFL playoffs, there have been 38 total turnovers. That's the most in a quarter century in the playoffs in the NFL. And 33 of the 38 have been by quarterbacks. In a divisional round alone, gentlemen, think about this. Last weekend alone, in four games, there were 20 turnovers. The most in a divisional round in this century, and 17 of the 20 turnovers were by quarterbacks. I've never seen this kind of epidemic level of turnovers where you may have a great game plan. You got great personnel. You got it all set up for a win, and then whack, Alex Singleton knocks the ball out of your running back's arms, completely pivots the momentum in the game. C.J. Stroud goes into the game with arguably the best defense in the last 10 years in the NFL. We can agree they're pretty darn good. And he just blows up his football team, gives the ball away to the point where my colleague Troy Aikman is saying during the game, it's time for some hard conversations between D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud. Well, you know what? I love Troy Aikman, and he's totally right. But those conversations need to happen before the playoffs start, not after you're already blown up and out of the playoffs. What's the reason why you had this record number of turnovers? Reckless play by the quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, C.J. Stroud, Josh Allen. Poor coaching, Ben Johnson, D'Amico Ryans, Sean McDermott, Kyle Shanahan. You're not protecting your quarterback properly. Kyle Shanahan is front and center on that, and it happens every year. So if you're the Houston Texans, and now you're the Denver Broncos, you've got a guy who's never been in this position before. It's completely uncharted territory with Jared Stidham, completely uncharted. You have to have a game plan that says, what are you doing first? Well, we are going to load up the box and protect this young man, number one. If we can't block them with five, we better be blocking them with six. If we can't do it with six, we better be blocking them with three tight ends. We better have a plan to block for Jared Stidham. Two, we better run the football. They are getting J.K. Dobbins back, apparently, but we'll have to see how good he is. But Harvey and Dobbins must run the football in this football game because Stidham is not a runner. He's not a threat to run. He's a drop-back quarterback. So they are going to load up the box. You watch Mike Vrabel in New England will load up the box and say, okay, guys, run the ball on us, and we will stop the run, and we will try to make Stidham beat us. I don't think he can. I don't think this can happen. I think there's a game plan out there where maybe if everything goes right, the Broncos can upset the New England Patriots, but I don't see it happening. I really don't.
Very good. Great setup. I'm with you. The other thing, miscommunication, and quarterbacks refuse to take a sack on a lot of these plays as well. So I think I know where you're headed based on that setup in the NFC. Hello, Darnold led the league in turnovers. Are you taking the Rams?
Right, and he led the league in turnovers, but he didn't turn the ball over in the first playoff game. That was key. At least Mike, and here's where Mike McDonald has done a great job coaching this football team. He realizes he's got one game to get into the Super Bowl. He's not going to let his quarterback destroy that opportunity. He basically didn't have Darnold do very much in the game at all.
Yeah.
In the divisional round, he basically took him out of it. Why? Because of the point that you just made. He led the NFL among all quarterbacks with turnovers, but he didn't turn the ball over. And this playoffs, at least McDonald recognized it and has saw what happened in the wild card round and now the divisional round. These playoffs are about one thing and one thing over: quarterbacks turning the ball over. So take Sam Darnold out of the game and basically just run the football and let your defense take over.
Okay, so you have it bookmarked here as a Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl, yeah?
I unless we see some crazy heroics by Matthew Stafford or unless Sam Darnold turns the ball over. Yep, I do. I really do. I think that defense right now is playing at a super high level at all three phases of the game and at all three levels. They get after the quarterback with four down linemen. They have a great bull rush up the middle. They'll get in Matthew Stafford's face. They will have to bracket coverage Puka Nacua and hope that Davante Adams doesn't beat them. Mm-hmm. But I think they're equipped to do that. I do like the Seahawks defense at home in this game. The Rams went through an unbelievably difficult trip to Chicago. That was a hard game to win. And if Caleb Williams doesn't turn the ball over at the end, they lose that game. So, mm-hmm. I mean, to me, I'm going to just say it. If Darnold doesn't turn the ball over, the Seahawks win the game. We can agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you one thing, and we're up against it like 30 seconds here. Do you think they were trying to hide him last week because of the oblique?
You know, it was on the other side. It wasn't on his throwing side. I don't think so. No.
Okay.
No. If you're asking me, do I know for sure? You're asking me my opinion. I don't think they were trying to hide him because of the oblique. I think they were trying to limit his ability to hurt them because of what you mentioned. Uh-huh. He led all quarterbacks in turnovers. I mean, these numbers are astounding, guys.
Yeah, you're right.
Come on.
Yeah.
38 turnovers in these playoffs, the most in a quarter century.
It was ridiculous.
It's all about the quarterbacks turning the ball over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have these inexperienced quarterbacks being coached poorly, and that's the bottom line. And McDonald has figured it out.
Sal Pell, you're the best. Great analysis as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sal Palantonio, covering the league, 34 years, ESPN on the Progressive guest line. He likes Seahawks, Patriots. Up next, you're going to hear a guy who has worked with a lot of quarterbacks over his career make the case and say the Broncos have extreme confidence in Jared Stidham.
Is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Good to have you on board here on a Wednesday as the Maestro joins us in studio. Mike Palm, VP of Circa Las Vegas, the Golden Gate, and the D. Mike, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, Mitch. Hello, Paul. Great to see you.
You'll have more on the whole Terry Pegula, Brandon Bean / Sean McDermott situation coming up, and You Cannot Be Serious in about 15 minutes. You're the perfect guy to ask about this. For those who have been with the show, the network, for a long time, they're well aware of this. For those who are new to it, I mean, we used to do a segment called No Hyperbole, and Anthony Lynn would make it every single week without fail when he was the coach of the Chargers. So now, with the Bills firing McDermott, the news came out today that they're... Now I get it, it's the Rooney Rule. You got to talk to a lot of people. They're going to interview him about the gig.
Is this really happening? Am I dreaming, or is this happy? I mean, this is all I want for Christmas, is Anthony Lynn. Don't you remember the game he coached at Buffalo a couple years ago when he was the Chargers head coach? They had the ball on the 2-yard line, needed a touchdown to win it, no timeouts, and he ran the ball on first down and limited him to one other
That's
play.
Right. That's right.
Remember,
yeah.
Didn't spike it, didn't throw it out, didn't throw. He ran the ball, and then they only had one other play left. He had terrible at the end of the first half. I could go on and on. I mean, he was one of the highlights of no hyperbole through the years, and I don't know if it's a Rooney thing or not, but boy, I mean, if this Dr. Mengele, David Gazzaniga, doesn't puncture Tyrod Taylor's young. I mean, Herbert's still holding the clipboard in San Diego for Anthony Lynn. Yeah. This is a dream come true for everyone if this happen.
Poor Justin Herbert early in his career.
Well, now you have to say, was it them or was it him? Is it always somebody else?
Okay. All right.
That's always somebody else? Is it Harbaugh now?
No, it was Roman. They did the right thing.
It was Roman.
And the offensive line.
And the offensive line. Yeah. Yeah. Don't you think they're going to be a popular play next year because McDaniel now is the OC?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Too popular?
That division's still tough. They can't be. Yeah. They won't get really priced out of it because of the division.
I had his reaction when the Giants talked to Pierce. As that was when I was talking to my Giants source, he was running down the guys they're talking to. Harbaugh, McCarthy. Pierce. I laughed at Big Mike, and then he said, Antonio Pierce, your buddy. I'm like, what are you talking?
Imagine if he ever resurfaced again as NFL head coach.
Yeah, that's a good one. Fourth and inches from the 35, 36, got a punt.
Let's punt it every single time.
Every time. They did it 7 times against the Colts in a game they needed to get the wild card.
Yep. Early sharp money / your opinions on these two games?
Yeah, Seattle. A little early on Seattle. I don't know. I have a Rams ticket from when they were going to trade Stafford. So I think I'm just going to let that ride in that. I think it'll be a good game. Can Darnold come through in the clutch? I mean, he wasn't terrific against San Francisco. I mean, they got the ball rolling downhill with the kick. And then the turnovers, and then they get the big lead, and then San Francisco was kind of inching their way back into the game, and then the touchdown sort of ended it. I think Denver's live here. I don't know what Stidham's going to be like. I personally would have gone out. Can you sign Rivers? Is Rivers eligible?
No. You can get Drew Brees, though.
And get somebody that just won't turn the ball over and throw a bunch of little short passes. I think the pass rush of Denver is good enough to get to May, who will turn the ball over. He has no pocket awareness. You watch that game? He doesn't know anybody's on his shoulder or anything like that. I think if that defense can create turnovers, the running game is good enough. The short passing game's good enough. I think the special teams are good enough. I think they're very live in this spot.
I would say, we're talking about this before the break as well, or in the break, if the Broncos front cannot get to May or they're not a nuisance to him, he's going to probably destroy them.
Well, Josh Allen, I mean, they went up and down the field on him. It was the turnovers that beat him.
Right.
I think this defense has been lit up a little bit. I think it's a little bit overrated. Outside of the rush, they can't really hold up on the back end. So that's the whole game. The whole game is, can they pass protect for me?
Okay, so Derek Stevens was on the program yesterday. He said the outcome for the book here on the national title game and in the future market was pretty good. Good results overall with the way that game finishing for the night, right? Indiana winning but not covering the game.
It was really strange the way we took it. We ended up needing Indiana by 1-6. That was it. If Miami would have won the game, it was still okay. But if Indiana would have won by 8 or more, it was not a good result. And this is with taking $1 million bet on Indiana on the money line and losing $300,000 of that. The result was still very positive.
Okay. So we kicked around yesterday, like a lot of people, like looking ahead to next season. How do you like make a case for a team right now? Now you have a university suing a quarterback, right? This is absolutely crazy.
This case is going to be huge, Mitch. We're talking about Duke suing their quarterback, who they won the ACC with, because he entered the draft, the transfer portal at the last day, but his NIL deal commits him to the end of 2026, so he has to play another season with Duke. They went to court to get an injunction for him not to be able to enter the portal. The judge says, I can't do that. But they're going to try to enforce this contract, meaning they're not going to allow him to go play somewhere else. But can they? All these universities have these arm-length relationships with NIL. We knew that when we got into the whole thing with UNLV. Everything's this committee. No, it's an NIL. It's not, you know, directly the university tries to stay at arm's length. And I don't know if these contracts are enforceable from the university standpoint. This is going to be a very interesting case and define this NIL era.
Well, don't you think, like, if it's in writing somehow, if it's, like, technically a contract?
Yeah, but who's the contract with? The contract with the person that gave the money? Is the contract with the car dealership? Who's the contract with? The university's not paying the kid. The sponsor's paying the
right,
kid.
Right, yeah.
So who's the plaintiff? Who has standing? Tobin Dodge? You know, I don't know here.
I can't imagine like it's going to be like this 20 years from now.
No,
right?
What we'll do is we'll have regulation, and the NCAA is going to step in and say, you have to have this, and you have to have all these parameters around NIL, because right now it's the Wild West. There's
it
no
totally
parameters.
Is, yeah.
There's no parameters around it.
Did you see the judge originally was a Duke basketball season ticket holder?
Oh, boy.
Really?
So you got all kinds of things going on here in scenarios.
Yeah, fantastic lies.
We almost had this with Williams, what we had, too.
Which Williams?
Washington.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Changed his
yeah.
mind when he yeah. came to his senses. Or that would have got ugly, too. But we're in a dangerous period right now. Look at what's going on in basketball. The kid at Baylor, and now what could happen at Alabama? I mean, the guy signed several contracts in the NBA. Now he's trying to come back
oh,
and
ridiculous.
Say I can play with Alabama?
Mm-hmm. You get D-League players.
Unbelievable.
The kid Louisville, that's the kid. I mean, like Calipari said, they're using the NIL to make their alimony payments.
Well, then, so do you think Cignetti was right then? When he said basically after the game, it is open, and if you do it the correct way, like anybody can make a run?
Well, but you know, he took a bunch of kids that weren't recruited by other people. I mean, let's not forget that there's a great coaching job that went on here. Mendoza wasn't sought after by the world. I mean, he took these kids that were average kids and got them to play as a team at a very high level. And can he do that again? Can he get another bumper crop? Can he identify two stars that are really four-star athletes and do that again? I don't think he would ever go to the NFL. I know people text me, should an NFL team take a run at him? I think he's built for the college game. He worked his life to get a D1 job. Now, would he take a bigger job than Indiana? Maybe. At a program where it might be easier for him to recruit? Possibly. I don't know, though.
I'll tell you another thing that feels almost like the Wild Wild West is how baseball teams can get away with these contracts.
This Tucker thing is going to be a lockout. I'm going to tell you right now, this $60 million for Tucker that the Dodgers paid, this whole situation that baseball did to itself by allowing them to keep all their TV money because McCourt was going through bankruptcy and they made this one-off deal where every other team has to share their TV money, not the Dodgers, mm-hmm. and they're the second biggest market behind the Yankees. They can pay anybody anything they want. These owners are going to demand a salary cap. The players won't accept it, and they're going to lock them out after this season. And this Tucker is the start of the lockout, I'm telling you.
I mean, first of all, we all know this. They don't need him,
no.
right? So, but yet, here's $60
million
a year. $60
million for a guy
year?
That doesn't want to be a superstar. We saw it in Chicago. He's the reluctant. He doesn't want any media. I now understand why Houston let him go. I kept saying, why would the Astros let this guy go? He's going to be an MVP in this league.
Right.
And then the Chicago experience, we understand why. But every contract is ludicrous. Toronto's going out and spending money for everybody, but they didn't want Bichette, but the Mets want to pay $42 million a year? What's wrong with that picture?
Uh-huh.
That's red flags there. Everything is so exaggerated. It's gonna end up being a lockout. Enjoy baseball this season.
Is that going to be a good thing down the road?
I think eventually it'll lead to more competitive balance to have a cap. If the penalties are punitive enough, I mean, because the Dodgers will just spend whatever. They have so much money because of the TV.
And I get the other people who will come out and say, well, look, I mean, blame the other teams. Don't blame the Dodgers because they have the money as well. I would also fight back and say, that's great, but maybe the Yankees didn't want to give Kyle Tucker $60 million a year or the Mets. I wouldn't.
Who would?
I wouldn't. There's
no
way.
Not even in the ballpark
no,
for me.
No, God, no. I'd laugh at that.
I read this and I said, it's wrong.
That's what I thought.
It's like when I saw the headline, Bo Nix out for season. I thought it was a joke. Nobody else was reporting it. Right?
I had to click on Schefter's Twitter bio like two or three times. I'm like, this has to be a fake one. This is a parody account, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did Jensen Lewis say? Their tax penalty is more than what 11, 12 teams' payroll is.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter to them.
He said the lockout's coming, no doubt. Yep.
No doubt. You could bet it. If you could bet it somewhere, bet it.
You
legally.
Could.
He was saying that at dinner at the College World Series. He said, lock it up. They're not having baseball.
Yep. So would you do cross-sport parlays with the Dodgers, NL, or World Series?
The price is so ridiculous.
Too early. I know.
Mm. But it's minus $7,500 to make the playoffs. Think about that. Think about that. $6 to win the division. Think about that in a sport where nobody wins 60% of their games.
What are you going to do if the win total is 105?
Well, this year was an easy under, wasn't it?
Yeah.
These teams get bored through long stretches of the season.
Football meets flavor with VSiN and Omaha Steaks, official sponsor of tailgating. Right now, spend $129, you get 2 pounds of wings, 50% off site-wide, omahasteaks.com/VSiN. Phenomenal, delivered right to your door. Check out the menu. The options are fantastic, omahasteaks.com/VSiN.
A bizarre situation with the Buffalo Bills and their head coaching spot all the way around. Mike Palm will elaborate next in You Cannot Be Serious. More NFL. We continue with Dan Leberfeld, kind enough to hang out with us for another segment. Follow him on X at Jets Whispers, Jets Confidential Magazine, press coverage radio show on Sirius XM NFL Radio Saturdays from 10 until 2 Eastern Time. All right, so we tease this before the break. Do you think it's actually reasonable to think the Jets could do the unthinkable? Reasonable to do the unthinkable and call the Raiders about the number one overall pick?
Well, I think they'll call for sure. I mean, it's no secret the Jets need a quarterback, but the problem is Jets have so many other needs. This is the worst defense that I covered for the Jets in my 30 years covering the team. I think I said that to you guys last week, perhaps. They have so many needs on defense, and they have four amazing picks. They have four picks in the top 44. So two in the first round, then two at the top of the second round. You could get four starters doing that. And I don't know if Mendoza is that good that you want to trade some of that draft capital to move up one spot. You know, maybe you stay put. I know you guys might not love Ty Simpson, but maybe Ty Simpson is a Bo Nix kind of quarterback that you get in the teens who's a little undervalued. Maybe he was hurt by the fact that the Alabama Crimson Tide didn't have much of a running game this year. Maybe you put him on a team with a running game. The Jets certainly can do that. Breece Hall went for 1,000 yards with no passing offense this year. So to me, maybe Ty Simpson is 16 and maybe Arvell Reese, the edge rusher at 2. I just think the Jets need to keep those four picks and get four starters. They have so many needs across the board on offense and defense, but especially on defense.
Good answer. I feel the same way with the Raiders. That's why I would trade down. I'm with you. I'm not sold on Mendoza either. And if they could do that, if the Jets pick up the phone as well. How about the rumors with Davis Webb? You said something interesting last segment about the young play callers and what Cohen did at Jacksonville. Would an NFL owner hire a 30-year-old to be his coach?
Well, I think it's a copycat league. And when you saw what some of these young coaches – who made their bones on the offensive side of the ball. When you look at Liam Cohn in Jacksonville, where Trevor Lawrence was treading water and all of a sudden, boom, has a breakout year with unbelievably good play calling by Liam Cohn. Ben Johnson does it with Caleb Williams in Chicago and to a degree, Kellen Moore with Tyler Shuck in New Orleans. You know, when the Jets hired Aaron Glenn, there was some criticism from some guys I know cover the team saying, you know, you're going with a defensive coach, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. That's not where the league is trending. All the rules favor the offense. And some of these young offensive coordinators, it's like they're playing Madden, the way they manipulate defenses and find the open guys. And what they do is they make it so easy on the quarterback because – they call games like a college OC where the first read is often open. And, you know, so many of these college quarterbacks are one read and run. And when you look at what Johnson did in Chicago and Liam Cohen did in Jacksonville, I think some teams in a copycat league might want to go down that road, bring in a Davis Webb and have him do that with their quarterback. But if you bring up Davis Webb with Buffalo, they don't really need that for their quarterback. Maybe other teams do, but when you look at Buffalo, they need to fix that defense, and they need to get a good offensive coach, but they don't need an offensive coordinator who's going to have to manufacture production for their quarterback. And that's what guys like Cohn and Johnson can do for quarterbacks trying to take that next step. Manufacture production with great play calling.
Okay, so, you know, this is a gambling network, and most people who we have talked to so far, odds makers, bettors, et cetera, they have made the case that the point spread movement from the look-ahead line when Denver was 1.5 against New England to like 6, which is no longer available, but 5 was way too big of an adjustment. And for the most part, again, they have faith in Jared Stidham coming in for one game anyway and being okay with a chance to win this for Denver. Do you feel the same way for those people who you talk to as well? Are they feeling the same way?
Well, I think that Denver has a good chance to win this game when you look at it from a few different perspectives. Denver has the best pass rush in the league, what, 71 sacks on the regular season. New England's offensive line is struggling, and New England's offensive line was struggling at home. You take an offensive line struggling and you put them on the road in one of the loudest stadiums in the league. I always bring up this anecdote I might have brought up to you guys. In that press box in Denver, I have to put a cap on my water because the table's shaking and I think the water's going to spill on my keyboard. That's how loud, that's how raucous that place is. It's loud, it shakes, and you take left tackle Will Campbell, who's not playing well in the playoffs. You put him against Nick Benito in one of the loudest places in the league. It's not just that it's loud. That's a really good defense under Vance Joseph, who could get a head coaching job. And there's another matchup issue. Right next to Will Campbell, you have another rookie, Jared Wilson, on the offensive line. Zach Allen, one of the best defensive tackles in the league, doesn't get enough attention for his work, the kid out of Boston College. So that left side of the line, I don't trust it on the road. Benito against Campbell. You know, when Campbell is in the draft, and I'm sure you guys did a lot of props on where Will Campbell would go. Remember all the talk about the short arms guys?
Yes. Yep.
That's a thing, man. I know people think, oh, that's stupid, short arms. Yeah, 33-inch arms are a problem at left tackle because you don't win the leverage game with 33-inch arms. He's having a problem there. He had a problem in the first round against Owe, the Chargers edge rusher, and then he had a problem against Will Anderson and against Houston. So what makes you think going on the road where he's going to have a hard time hearing the snap count, hard time thinking, going against Benito, you think that's going to go well?
Okay. Fair enough. So you think they're live for sure. What about the other game? Who do you like to come out of that?
Well, you know, when you hear Sean McVay talking during the week, early in the week, that he took the blame for the play calling in the Rams' last game, that it wasn't very good, you know he's going to have the mother of all game plans this week. And here's the thing. We all know Seattle's defense is great. But who put up over 500 yards against that defense and won the turnover battle by a +3 in that game? They lost in overtime. But I know Seattle's a really good defense. But I think McVay and Stafford have a good feeling for it. And if anyone's going to move the ball and put up points and yards against Seattle, it's that team. And with Sam Darnold, yes, I'm not getting into the, is the other shoe going to drop with Sam Darnold? You know, I covered him. He's a great kid. He always says the right thing. He always does the right thing. Is he a top-tier quarterback? No, you have to manage the game with him. But I'm worried about that oblique a little bit. That kind of thing doesn't go away that fast. Probably took a Toradol shot before the last game. Probably have to take another one. Who knows if that thing will act up again? I think it was kind of touch and go before the last game. So you got Sam Darnold with the oblique. You have a team that certainly can move the ball on a very good defense. I would consider that game a toss-up. I could see it going either way because I think the Rams are a team that can move the ball on a defense that most teams in this league struggle doing so this year.
Fair, no doubt. You got to be freaked out by the special teams edge, though, right?
You're talking about the issues?
With the Rams, yeah.
I mean the Rams special teams issues.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. They fired their special teams coach in season, Blackburn, and they hired a guy that I covered with the Jets, Ben Kotwika, a great story, was an Apache helicopter pilot in Iraq, in Afghanistan, went to Army, played at Army. So when they fired their special teams coach and promoted Kotwika, it wasn't like they were hiring an assistant special teams coach. This guy has been a head special teams coach all over the league with Washington, with the Jets, and he's a guy that was in the Army. He's got an organized unit. I think that wasn't one of those situations where you're just promoting an assistant who never did it before. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been a upgrade.
Okay. Dan, thanks so much for the time today. Try to stay warm back in New York. We appreciate it.
Okay, just a little above zero here, so enjoy your weather out there.
Sounds fun.
Oh, doubt.
There you go. You can follow Dan on X at Jets Whispers and Jets Confidential Magazine.
Snow and cold in Dallas-Fort Worth as well. Imagine, you were there for the Super Bowl, right?
When the ice storm.
Couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Couldn't drive.
It took, I don't remember exactly how long it is from like where we stayed. I think it was downtown Dallas to the actual stadium. I think from what I was told, in general, no traffic. That might be a half an hour. We were on the shuttle buses with a police escort.
With a police escort.
Which is crazy to me.
I know.
15 miles an hour, maybe. Yeah. Tops. That's how bad it was. Anyway, so...
Yep.
No, I don't want it. I never want to live in those conditions ever again. I made that decision in my early 20s.
Everyone's getting hit with it this weekend. Well, it might be an upgrade, but still you had the disaster against Carolina, too. So, and then Shahid's returning kicks every game.
Boy, is that guy dangerous.
No doubt. Just right through the – don't even mess around. Right through the end zone. Don't get cute. Don't even mess around.
No, you have to do that. And also, but if I'm Seattle, you're going to have stuff dialed up for Shahid in this game.
You better.
You're designing plays that can go a long, long ways. That's in the running game, by the way.
Yeah.
And if he gets, you know, a couple, like two, that. Three targets as well. Well, you have to look at him rushing yards.
Yep.
You can probably find a head-to-head, by the way. That would be a good prop for Mark, for books to put up.
Yeah.
Head-to-head rushing yards. Who's going to have more, Shaheed or Nacua?
Well, the other thing, too, like Ozzie said to the commercial break, there's going to be the passes behind the line of scrimmage to Puka, too.
Oh, yep.
Count that.
Stay tuned. It's Wednesdays. Matt Brown, Mike Somich on primetime for 4 hours into Cashing Out with Dustin Sweetelson. Best of luck with your bets tonight.